true outcomes they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. You want to win that score sheet, you're gonna want to stay with Three True Outcomes.
Howdy. Welcome to the Three True Outcomes Score Sheet Baseball Podcast, presented by Baseball Prospectus. I'm your host, Ian Lefkowitz, and I gotta catch them all. How are you doing? So, joining me as always, I'm snickering, from Plymouth, Michigan. His home is a Pokemon gym. It's Ben Murphy. Ben, how are you doing?
I'm all right.
How many squirrels do you have?
I don't play Pokemon Go. I never got into Pokemon, and like apparently all of my friends are like super thrilled about Pokemon Go, and I don't get it.
So. All of everyone's friends are super thrilled about Pokemon.
You haven't been introduced yet.
Sorry. Wait. Strike it for the record.
And joining us,
I'm not editing this.
As always, from our nation's capital, it's our microtransaction, Jared Weiss. Jared, how are you doing?
Can I talk now?
Yeah, you're a freemium product.
I'm doing well, thanks. I have not installed Pokemon Go on my phone.
Yes,
nice job. I installed and uninstalled Pokemon Go in a period of 20 minutes. Everything about it seems unappealing to me, such as the desire to go outdoors and meet people. That's not why I got into video games.
You do lots of walking around, though.
Yeah, my goal with games is to do the opposite of that. That's why. Alright.
I saw a post on Facebook of somebody talking about his mailman playing Pokemon Go, and I thought, you know what? That is a great fit. That's a great fit.
Yeah. You know what? You want to have the job you love.
Yeah. There's been some trouble in D.C. The Holocaust Museum, yes, and Arlington National Cemetery are not super thrilled
about people meandering around with their phones out.
Yeah.
Yeah, I saw some of that too. I can't imagine.
Someone must have figured that out. Okay, get your Charizards ready. We have a great episode for you, a continuing cliffhanger from last podcast. So you can go back and listen, or not. We'll catch you up. I mean, it's not Game of Thrones. We don't need like a previously on. You don't have to read 6 books. God almighty. But before we get into that, first, I think we want to just take some questions. And, you know, we love getting questions, as always, coming close to trade deadline season. So, as always, please feel free to email us at scoresheet@baseballprospectus.com with any questions that you might have. With that, I'm going to turn it over to our mailbag captain. How's it looking this week?
It's pretty full. It's great. I'm a happy guy. It doesn't take much.
It's true. It's true.
The first question comes from Daniel, who is asking about the new MLB draftees and how they compare to prospects, in particular Eloy Jimenez versus, say, Mickey Moniak. So, Ian, you responded to this one. You have some thoughts?
Yeah. So I wanted to make sure we took this one on air because I think it is an interesting point that we sort of mentioned during the draft podcast, but is probably worth bringing up to the forefront. When it comes to integrating draft prospects, integrating the July 2nd international prospects, you know, you just have to keep track of the bird in the hand and who is available in your league. I think Eloy Jimenez has become a very hot name recently, and you know, I'm sure everyone watched the Futures game and knows everything that happened. Yeah, in it. Just in case you didn't.
Oh, he Eloy made a great catch, right?
Yes.
Yes. See, I didn't even have to watch the game to know.
Yeah, he made an amazing catch. Double hit a rocket home run out to second deck of Petco. So I think a lot of people know who Eloy Jimenez is now, even if they were confused before. And the question I think came in before that. Not that he's been gaining steam otherwise. What I'm trying to say is, I think players like this are available in season. If it's not Eloy Jimenez, maybe it's Francisco Mejia, his teammate, or Tyler O'Neill last month. I'm just looking through the futures game rosters right now because I have that in front of me. Willie Calhoun. These are sort of upper minors prospects who are gaining some traction. And, as I said, I think these types of players tend to be very undervalued in score sheet. You can probably still get them even in somewhat competitive leagues at a discount. And especially compared to first round picks, who I think are incredibly overvalued after the first wave of picks. So the question, I guess, is whether Mickey Moniak is as good as Eloy Jimenez. So there are a couple things that Mickey Moniak has as an advantage. Number one is his number one status. He's the top pick, and he's always going to be the top pick. If you don't think that counts for anything, just look at all of the things that Delman Young was traded for in his career.
Playoff hero, Delman Young?
Playoff hero, Delman Young, yeah, sorry. This is a pro Delman Young podcast. Yeah, okay. Well, I believe he ended his career above replacement in WAR. That depends on which system you use, actually. But
which tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah, nonetheless, the top pick, I think, as the top pick, he's going to have trade value for a very long time. And we said, like, Byron Buxton, who is not the top pick but was number two, is somebody we're keeping in our league despite a season of relatively poor play, both because we think he can improve, but also we don't see his trade value declining all that much in between now and the end of the season, even if he has a season and a half of extremely poor play.
It's like Nintendo stock. You buy low and you sell high.
Yeah. So in that sense, I think he's a little more interesting than Jimenez, who's probably a little bit of a steadier value. Jimenez actually probably has more superstar potential, and I think in the last 2 weeks, actually, between the time this question was written and now, he's become a lot more popular, and this may not be true. But I think Moniak has more name recognition. He'll also get more chances, and he's a center fielder. That said, I think Jimenez, in my mind, is the better prospect. So it depends on what you're really looking for in a... although Jimenez is no sort of thing as well. His blight discipline stats are very stinky.
Combo?
That's right. Yeah. I think that's the question that you're asking is the kind of question that I think you should be asking, especially if the question is not Mickey Moniak, but is a little bit down the list, is more like Blake Rutherford, who's the number 19 pick last year, for the Yankees, or even somebody a little bit further down the list. I think at a certain point, those kinds of players become overvalued pretty quickly.
So I'm going to go off book because I don't know if you guys saw the round 42 in Daniel's what? League. So round 42 in Daniel's League was, I think, 11 prospects and Michael Bourne.
Nice.
Which is pretty fantastic. Like, I'm just trying to figure out how that works. How's there a league where, like, one person's getting Michael Bourne and everyone else is taking prospects?
So was Michael Bourne the first player taken?
No.
Okay.
Well, the first real player, yes, but he was the seventh pick in the
No, that's what I'm saying. Is like, at a certain point, even if you've forgotten to set your queue, you've gotten 6 reminder emails at that point.
Yeah, yeah, it was the 7th pick. Or no, it was later than that. So he jumped in later, so I don't know what happened.
That explains.
Really cute, like, because whatever, I need someone. Michael Bourne. I haven't looked at the league. Maybe Michael Bourne helps his team. I don't know. I didn't look at the league. But I want to talk
likely
about...
That he was watching
what would you
Bourne
be expecting
trilogy
to find if you looked at that league?
I don't know. Maybe he's got players entirely movie puns, and like Mike Bourne is going to just... I saw the trailer and is excited. I don't know what to tell you.
It's true. Maybe his team name is extremely unexciting and just needs a Bourne identity.
Yeah, someone issued him an ultimatum. Anyway, I want to talk about the 9 pick. I don't know how to pronounce his name. Maiton?
Oh, Kevin Maiton, sure.
Yeah. So what do you guys think about drafting a guy who just had his bar mitzvah?
I believe you mean quinceañera.
Fine, yeah. So Ben, like, when would you take a 15-year-old?
What?
16, I don't know, how old is he?
He's 16, I think.
Is he that good?
16 recently. So, it's a good question. I haven't seen him play. So, I think the best story I've got is somewhere between Miguel Sano and Miguel Cabrera as, in terms of hype. Now, there are certainly prospects who have been hyped almost as much who have not been, who have not panned out to that degree. So I don't want to say, like Ron Guzman's doing okay now, but has not really succeeded to that degree. But I think the two biggest prospects in the international draft in the international pool at the time of signing were Sano and Cabrera, and I think Maiton is probably slotting in right behind them. So think about what if Miguel Sano was a 15-year-old and, you know, looked really good but could be highly variable.
So, like, would you draft him? What percent chance does someone need to be as good as, like, Miguel Cabrera if you want to take them if they're not going to be able to play for, like, what, 5 years, 4 years, like, at best?
Yeah, I mean, the draft pick now is not the real cost. It's the holding him with your 35th right. round pick for 6 years or whatever.
Yeah. So, obviously, if you knew you were getting Miguel Cabrera, I think you'd do that, right?
Oh, yeah.
So I guess that's a question. If you're like 80% likely to be Miguel Cabrera, or 50% or 20%, 5%,
yeah, some,
you still do it.
I was gonna say 15%, 10 to 15%, because if you hit on one of those, your team is contending almost without you having to draft well for, God, a decade.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair.
It's a number. Superstar format.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So, and we can talk
right.
about
if,
the, like,
if you want to hold
tenets
on
of
to
simulations
a player.
If you want, but, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Because you can keep them forever. So.
Yeah. Right. If you're going to hold on to a player, your minor leader should be as good as possible. And I think... You know, there's a somewhat of a misconception that Maiton will have no value between now and, let's say, 2020, when he makes the majors. If things go well, actually, he'll make the majors of 2020. But that said, you know, he will probably appreciate in trade value. He's going to land on the top 100 lists this offseason. He'll probably land on the top 100 list next offseason as well. And I assume he won't play all that much, or he'll hit the AZL by the end of the year. Year after, he'll probably hit full season ball. And if he's at all good, he'll move up. If he's great, he'll move up dramatically. And that's 2 years to get, like, a pretty giant upgrade if he performs to his ability. And if he doesn't, you'd probably hold on to him anyway, but you know, you start devaluing the peck.
Okay. So let's go to the next question from Grant. Grant is asking about diminishing returns in bullpen, and he was asking us if he should trade for a specific relief pitcher who we won't name, but let's just say he has 28 consecutive saves if you include the All-Star game, but it could be any relief pitcher. This is just a theoretical hypothetical.
So, Francisco Rodriguez?
Something like that, yes. Okay. So, how would you decide if your team watched, his team is playoff bound, or he thinks he has a good shot to make the playoffs? How would you decide if you need another shutdown type reliever?
Well, you should see if all of your starting pitching prospects have failed and have either moved to other teams or the bullpen. And if you have that hole, you probably want to fill in from the back. Again, hypothetically.
Right.
Got him. You teed that one up nicely, Jared. I think there's one other element to the question in the email about hooks that also plays into this.
Yeah, that's a fair point. We can talk about hooks too.
So, and I think because it was sort of, to me, it was integrated into the thought process around whether you need more arms or not. Because if you're not seeing pitcher AAA ever, then your hooks are high enough that you're obviously using all the innings that your pitchers are throwing. And the problem that you're trying to optimize is, what are the lowest hooks I could set before I see pitcher AAA? Mm-hmm. So I think he had 5 or 6 relievers when he sent that email, which is, you know, enough if your relievers are all pitching and your hooks are high enough. And I think he was saying his hooks were all like 1 to 2. Does that sound right? And we basically said, well, you know, you could add up to like 12 relievers or something like that and just start hooking them absurdly low and still be okay. And I think it's sort of a balancing act, and I don't think you can have too many relievers unless you're like really sacrificing depth at other positions. But you've got, you know, 30 and then 35 roster spots to play with, so.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there are, in general, in my experience, diminishing returns about the 10th reliever, including long men. You know, after that, you start having to make really tough decisions with your lineup card, or just could sign that 11th reliever to the farm system. And I would say maybe even before that, that your relievers don't have to be great, but that's where I like using my back end starters.
Yeah, and then you hook almost all of them super low, and then those last guys you don't hook low at all, so that you just use them as the backup plan to avoid pitcher AAA.
Yeah, something I've started doing that I really enjoy in some leagues, especially leagues where you have some flexibility, that make sure your terrible 8th or 9th starter, you know, that you're getting for desperate inning fill is a lefty, and then just set their hook at 0.25 and just use them to blast away platoon splits and get teams to like take out all of their best lefties. And then hook them like at the first, an immediate sign of trouble.
That's exciting.
Yeah. So
I kind of like that.
Yeah, we got some entertaining strategy, and because they're starters, you can do it in almost every game.
Because they've got enough innings.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah, and no, I think problem. Our recommendation to Grant was to get more relievers anyway, right? He ended up trading for that guy that you're not naming, and then probably could use a couple more on top of that, I think.
Yeah, like maybe Brad Brock and Darren O'Day. Michael Givens.
You're leaving out Dylan Bundy.
Am I?
Let's see what you did there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, what do you think of the approach I took to try to frame what your expected benefit is, looking at your bullpen now and looking at the reliever you're thinking about getting, and if you had replaced your worst innings with the relieve your innings to try to get a frame, like what sort of, how many wins you think you could potentially be gaining from the trade. Because I think, you know, more than like a hitter or something, you have a better idea of how many runs a pitcher is giving up for your team.
I think it's good, and because it's math, I didn't 100% follow your calculations, but one thing I think is reasonably important to account for is that you can't really do a complete straight swap because you have to account for the chaining effect. Even in simulations, you can at least to some degree move your pitchers into higher leverage situations. And so you're not really replacing the bottom pitcher's innings. You're replacing, you know, the secondary pitcher who is replacing the third pitcher, who's replacing the fourth pitcher, et cetera. So,
oh, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100. This is just the absolute max. If the pitch you're getting has given up 5 runs in 50 innings and your 50 worst innings have given up 20 runs, then, you know, at the absolute most, you're getting 15 runs probably. And, you know, it's going to be something less than, say, on the order of like 10 runs. And that maybe helps you think a little bit about what you're willing to trade in order for that 8 to 10 runs.
Right. Right.
Okay.
I have one more thing to say about relievers that I've heard JRM say, and I guess I believe it, but he's smart enough that I never really thought too hard about it. I just sort of believed him. And that is that I think if you do it correctly, your score sheet pitcher should always have lower ERAs than your, like, their real life stats, just because of the way that the hooks work. And I think that's maybe another useful test, is that, you know, the ERA balancing is going to try to get your score sheet pitchers as close to their real life ERAs as possible, and if you're hooking them low enough, that won't happen, I don't think.
That has the ring of truth.
Yeah,
so, sounds right. Does it depend on the quality of your league?
I think it depends on how many relievers you have, more than that, but I think the idea for a team making a playoff push would be that you have enough relievers that you're hooking them low enough that they never actually hit their runs limit. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So. Anyway, something to check if you're wondering if you could use more relievers or not. If you aren't seeing pitcher AAA and your pitchers are putting up ERAs in the score sheet that are about what they put up, or sorry, your relievers, not all of your pitchers, your starters are going to be a little different, but it might still be lower, but the relievers especially, I think, should have lower score sheet ERAs than in real life.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry, go ahead, Jared.
Good. No, I've got a reader email to segue into sim stuff, but if there's anything else you guys want to talk about first, we can do that.
No, I'm good.
No, let's get that sim life going. Just please ask this next question to Simlish.
I wish I knew. And it's not really a question, but Steve wrote us with some of his ideas on baseball sims, and thanks, Steve. We appreciate it. We read it. I think it's good stuff. And so, yeah.
Sorry. I think we should just introduce the topic in a little bit further before we get into that question. Sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
But for those of you who had not joined us last week, we left off at a precipice where we had discussed the concept of, you know, what would make for a good simulation, or what would you like to see in a simulation? You know, leaving, let's say, score sheet aside, and what you're looking for in score sheet, or what you would want score sheet to do. But starting instead from first principles, like, what do you think makes for a good simulation or a good game? And we asked for some thoughts, and Steve is one of the people who weighed in. So, sorry, I just wanted to introduce the topic before we moved ahead.
No, thanks. So Steve brought up a bunch of things, and I'm sure we'll get to them now or later at some point. But one theme for that he talks about a little that I found interesting was sort of, I'm summarizing it as the idea of openness. So partially it's the fantasy players having some maybe say in the future of the sim, or just the people behind the sim soliciting feedback and using that in order to improve the sim. But along with that, the idea of what he calls a master wiki that, as he says, addresses all aspects of how the software works. So, I mean, I think that's there's some good and bad things to talk about that. But so what do you guys think about that, about the idea of, let's say, in one extreme, absolutely everything about how the sim works being open for inspection? Because I can definitely see some good reasons for that, but I could also see some reasons why maybe we'd want some things hidden.
Can I go first, Ian? Is that okay?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, so after seeing Steve's email, I've been thinking about this a little bit. And so I think the thing that he's getting at is, if you know exactly how the simulation software works, then theoretically the difficulty is only in how you play to that simulation, and that means probably most of the challenge is in which players you draft and how you use them. And I think most of the uncertainty that we would all have is basically like picking the right players. So I'm going to boil this down a little bit to, in that case of like pure white box, everyone knows everything, you could see the source code if you wanted to, the challenge as a fantasy player is almost exclusively on choosing the right baseball players. And we could think of like traditional rotisserie as sort of an example of this, even though it's not a simulation. Obviously, like the nuts and bolts of who wins are very obvious. And so, you know, the basic challenge is just, who do I want to draft? And score sheet as like a reference point is sort of in the middle of this continuum. And then I was thinking about real life baseball and like, you know, Sandy Alderson's job as the GM of the Mets or what have you, as like the other end of the spectrum where the actual engine, the mechanism by which you win, is sort of a black box. You know, maybe it's a gray box, I guess it might be the better descriptor. But we know the rules of the game, obviously, but we don't really know anything about the underlying properties, I guess, of the inherent randomness or other chance that goes into determining the outcome. And it seems like one of the things that draws people into playing simulated fantasy baseball is this idea of realism and the concept that you're able to play like you were the GM of this major league team. And there are some things that sabermetrics have helped illuminate in terms of like what baseball is and how it works, but we don't really know them for sure, and we're always sort of trying to come up with better ways to describe what we think is going on. Without really knowing and without ever quite being as precise or as accurate as we really want to be. And I understand why Steve feels like, in the case of this sort of game that we're playing and offering, he calls it a software, which I think is kind of just interesting word choice just unto itself. But I struggle with the idea that people would actually be happier knowing exactly how everything is going to play out, just because to me it seems like if you really wanted a format like that, you wouldn't have come to simulation in the first place. Part of what you're getting by coming to a simulated environment is the idea that there's something more nuanced going on that determines the outcome of the game that you don't know everything about, and you will never truly be able to comprehend or like pinpoint precisely and accurately. And so like that was sort of like the end of that big train of thought, is there's sort of this spectrum between I know everything about how it works to I don't really know anything about how it works. And Steve is sort of saying he wants something very close to that first end where he knows almost everything about how it's going to work, or like nearly everything, you know, he says in his email, a wiki with all of the information. And I guess I'm curious, I wanted to pause quickly and get your guys' thoughts on this, because I have one follow-up question that's related to this after you answer that question. So if we're going to, I'm just going to quantify it so it's easy for you to give the answer. If we're going to give a number from 0 to 100, where 100 is the percentage of information you know about the number is the percentage of information you know about how it works. So 100 is like the white box. I know everything. There's a master wiki that tells me everything, or I can see the source code. 0 is something like being a real life GM where I don't know anything for sure, but I can sort of observe what happens and try to describe it to the best of my ability. There's two things I want you to give me a number for. The first is, what do you think you would prefer personally? And the second is, what do you think score sheet is on that scale?
That's tough.
Yeah. Remember, I warned you before the podcast that I had more questions than answers. But it wasn't that I didn't think about this. I've been thinking about this a lot. I think this is interesting. So just give me a note. What happened?
So I think.
No, I'm here.
I think for me, so I'll give you the numbers and I have one comment too after that. So I think I think I personally want something more towards the zero end of the spectrum than the 100 over the other side was.
Okay.
And I think score sheet, I think in some sense it's hard to say because no one other than the Bartons know exactly what's in the code. And, you know, maybe we think we figured out, or we, the general we, not us, we have figured out some of the nuances and details around it. I think is, I would guess it's probably in like, I don't know, put in like the 60 to 70 kind of range.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I think the one, so I don't know exactly where Steve was getting at this, but I guess the one point that I'd add is that I think there's, in some sense, there's a difference between knowing exactly what the source code is, and maybe that's what he was saying. But I think also it's, sometimes it feels like the Bartons have released things in drips and drabs, whether it's in the bottom of emails or a response to score sheet talk or something. Mm-hmm. And if all of the publicly available stuff was aggregated in one place, I think that's, to me, seems like a clear win. I don't know that I feel like you should have an advantage just because you subscribe to certain things or you've been following for 6 years and you remember that 5 years ago they said something about something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and because I was intently listening. What? It's hard to follow. So, yeah, so I think when we're talking about, when we're talking about the game product, so you're balancing kind of this desire for openness, for transparency, with a desire to make something more fun. And the desire to listen to people who are, you know, talking about the product and, you know, having them create applications that improve your product and build off your product too. And I think there's some interest in having an open product anyway. But I am probably one who leans a little bit more on the things should be built internally side, and then, you know, obviously tested with the public, and you should be responsive to feedback. But I'm probably more interested in a system that's on the closed end, just because, you know, I think the people who know the product should be able to, or should guide the product. And I think it's very tough to solicit user feedback in an extremely open way.
Ben, I want to hear your responses in terms of the numbers, and you say you had a follow-up.
Yes, I do have a follow-up question.
Just want to say that this reminds me of, I forget if I talked about it, there's a book I read called Private Truths, Public Lies by, it looks like, Timur Kuran. It's a kind of a fascinating book. I highly recommend it to everybody. It's a little on, I guess, the scholarly side, but it's still pretty readable. And it's kind of, it made me at least, think about openness versus keeping things closed in a new light. In particular, like some of the examples it brings up is, for example, Congress and politicians and things like that. And I think the, at least for me, immediately my gut reaction, everything else, make everything open, we can see everything that goes on. And I think the book makes some compelling arguments for why some political discussions, that sort of thing, may be more beneficial to us as a whole if they're kept closed and private. And I think that's in some way relates to this. It's called Private Truths, Public Lies, The Social Consequences of Preference Falsification.
Yeah. I think I've read some research along those lines, too, and kind of ascribe to those theories.
So, Jared, my numbers, I think I would probably put score sheet around a 65. I think one of the distinctions that you were starting to get at that I didn't, that I explicitly didn't make because I was sort of going to leave it up to your interpretation, and I think Steve gets at this in his email, is a differentiation between the understanding of how you can interact with the simulation versus how the simulation functions behind the scenes. And I think some of what Steve talks about when he talks about score sheet specifically maybe conflates those two things a little bit. And I think we wanted to like set aside score sheet, so we were really focusing on just like how the underlying sim works. I think my preference is probably somewhat similar to you guys, where like if I were playing, I wouldn't want to know exactly how it works. And my follow-up question, and I'm glad because like your answers sort of play into this, is if it's not important to you to, well, sorry, if you prefer a situation where you don't know exactly how the engine is working, how important is it to you that the way that the engine works is, in your mind, a reasonable facsimile of reality? Like, how is reality?
Are you going right into our tenets here?
No, well, sort of, but I think the question is, you know, you've already said that you don't really want to know how it works. But when we've talked about it before, I think we've all sort of said the goal, well, the sort of implied goal of the simulation is to replicate reality. And I'm sort of wondering why, or if that's really true, like if that is actually a goal that we agree on pursuing. So I sort of wanted to ask if you think realism is important, and obviously there's a spectrum there too, where like I'm not talking about what would baseball be like if we were playing on the moon or on Jupiter. I'm just saying, how important is it that, say, platoon splits are handled based on the pitcher handedness instead of the batter handedness, or something like that? Is that, and like, that's an example of like how we know certain parts of how score sheet works and why we would give it like a 65 on that first scale. But what if you didn't know anything about how platoons worked and you were sort of trying to infer it for yourself? How important is it that it's realistic to you? Like, what if the platoon splits in the simulation were random for whatever reason? The magnitude was random and the direction was random, but like influenced by some sense of reality, but not individualized in any way, for example.
I would not like that as much, because I think, so I mean, I don't know if we just want to get into tenets, because I think I have some thoughts around that, but my general reaction is that a simulation engine, to the best degree possible, should mirror a player's ability. And I believe that platoon splits are a consequence of the player's innate ability. If you're not using them, I think to some degree, you know, it's a matter of approach. It's a matter of, you know, what kind of, you know, whether a player is a pull hitter or not, whether a player is a ground ball pitcher or not. You know, especially with pitchers, platoon splits are as much a function of pitch assortment. We know, for instance, that changeup pitchers don't have very strong platoon splits, and slider pitchers obviously do. Low slot pitchers do. To my mind, and I think platoon splits are a really good example. You know, it's not a question of like, is that realistic? It's like, is that fundamentally, you know, mirroring a player's ability so that when you draft a player, you're getting what you believe to be his result. That to me is what I mean when I'm talking about realism, as opposed to, let's say, ERA or even FIP, which is kind of this abstract concept, or WAR, which is an abstract concept. And I don't particularly tie that to reality.
Jared, what do you think?
I don't know. I think it's a good question. I don't know. I don't know if I have an answer for it. I don't know. I have to think about it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. So I guess, Ian, my follow-up then would be, if you don't want information about how the simulation works, are you sure that you'll be able to tell enough about how realistic it is that you'll like it or dislike it based on the underlying realism, even though you never actually can verify it?
Yes. Yes, I think the output should be, to some degree, verifiable. You know, you should be able...
But, okay. So you're saying
you should be
the
able
output,
to start
like...
from the output. And I don't mean, like, entirely closed. I don't think you should not issue, like, a rule book, for instance. I'm just saying, like, you shouldn't...
The rules are, like,
rules
of baseball.
Yeah, I'm just saying I'd rather not release, let's say, the source code. Or ask people to, like, make your, you know, build your own, and we'll put it on GitHub, and you can fork it however you want.
If it's important that the platoon splits are replicating reality, and you don't want to know the nuances of how it's coded, how will you know that output that you see in player performance is actually a fault in the simulation and not just a manifestation of randomness? Even reality is a manifestation of randomness over, like, the player's true talent level.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I mean, I don't really understand. Like, you would run a correlation.
I don't think it's that simple.
Because there's a lot of factors going on.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it would be I'm not saying it would be a 100. I would say it would be directionally accurate.
Yeah, but
I don't know if you could isolate just that.
Maybe we're talking about different things, or maybe you're speaking in a way I don't understand. I don't see why that would be a problem at all.
Okay. It might not be worth trying to get into the nuanced details of why you could or could not measure whether the underlying realism was realistic enough or not. I don't know.
I'm getting deep.
No, because I think you have to start out with that sort of assumption and agree on that before you could talk about, more specific and concrete, interesting things like, what do we know about how platoon splits work? You have to first agree that it's important that the simulation is trying to be realistic in the way that it models the platoon splits.
That's a good point, actually. You have to convince people that it's doing that, which is different than it actually doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's my point. If the output looks right, you don't want to know what's going on under the covers. You just want to feel good about it.
And I think in some sense that'd probably be okay. If you could come up with a sim that's, like, entirely random, but feels like it's just spitting out accurate stuff and gives people the options to play around with all the stuff they want to play around with. In some sense, I think that'd be fine.
Yeah.
Be a little disingenuous, but...
Okay.
But I think it's going to be a little tough to have something that's right. out entirely random.
I think, so, you say entirely random, but I think we're sort of conflating randomness with uniform randomness. Because when most people think of randomness, they think of, this was like an episode of Numbers back in the day, right? Where like when most people think of randomness, they think of like this very evenly distributed.
I'm sorry, do you mean num threers?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. They think of this like very evenly distributed pattern of dots or something like that. When, you know, actual mm-hmm. randomness has clustering and clumping and streaks and that sort of thing. And that attribute of random number generation and like distributions of random numbers to me is part of why I don't know how you could say that realism is important and also that you could verify it without actually knowing exactly how it works.
That brings me back to Steve's email, because there was an interesting paragraph in there. I don't know if you saw it near the end. I'll read it out real quick. So Steve writes, one aspect that he's talking about other baseball sims. he says one aspect that they seem to have in common is that they usually are driven off of some sort of randomization technique. Baseball doesn't seem to be that random. Last night in the Fort Bragg game, the best thing that he saw that week, they mentioned that Christian Yelich was really dialed in. A realistic sim, if not based on events yet to occur, should provide for the possibility of such streaks other than what the randomizer might spit out.
Can I stop you for a second?
Yep.
So, like, I've had the pleasant opportunity to know a lot of smart people, and probably the smartest person I've ever met works in a baseball front office and worked very extensively to try to find any way at all to model streakiness in something that was predictable and could not, and came to the conclusion that the streakiness that we see is not in any sort of attribute that we'll ever be able to measure, or at least couldn't at the time, I guess.
Yeah, well, that team won 14 straight games, so what do you know?
they did once win 14 straight games. I think we can pretty easily disagree with Steve's assertion there.
Yeah, although I will say I do know, for instance, out of the park baseball has a hot streak factor, and I immediately turn it off as soon as I get each year's product. So
it's like people want to believe certain things exist that don't actually exist, and that feature probably only exists in that software because people asked for it and they responded by developing it, even though there's pretty compelling evidence that it's unrealistic.
Yep. Agree there.
Well, I think it's an interesting point, and I think the sentence that I like, baseball doesn't seem to be that random. I think we all agree that baseball is super random.
Yeah.
But I agree with Steve, and I could see how users of any sort of sim would want it to feel like it's not that random. I think that's sort of an interesting dilemma that one faces.
Yeah, and I think randomness, I guess we've just been philosophical the whole time. Randomness means a couple different things. So, like, the outcome of any given at-bat is random to a degree, but it's all explicable. Like, if you asked me, you know, why did Chan Sisko, for instance, hit a home run in the Futures game, is true.
Kinda he's awesome. In front of me.
He hit as many home runs in the Futures game as he did in the entire season. Until the Futures game.
Would you say that's due to chance?
Wow!
Yeah. So, yes, in a sense I would. And in a sense I would say it's due to the player. So, very different, because then it's due to chance. You know, it's also a function of the swing. It's a function of the pitch. You know, it's not actually random in the sense that there's no... like reason.
Okay, so So I have used the word random in like the colloquial way and not in like a specific nerdy way. And what we're actually talking about is the difference between deterministic and stochastic, I think.
Yes.
Which is that there's some amount of uncertainty in how the events will unfold, but once the events unfold, we can say with certainty why those events led to a certain outcome.
Yeah, I believe baseball a simulation should have stochastic randomness. But
so the problem is, if you're trying to build a simulation that has some amount of stochasticity to it, you have to identify, like in a general sense, what the mean and standard deviation of those like random numbers are going to be.
Yes.
And when you guys talk about having it be random but not feel random, what I hear and like what my brain thinks is something like, you want the mean to line up with what you're expecting, and you want the standard deviation to actually be smaller than it is in real life, so that the range of possible outcomes doesn't deviate too much from what you're expecting to see, even if it's not the same outcome over and over.
I think that's fair.
It's like a successful sim, yeah.
And you don't actually want, for example, something that Scoresheet, I think, does moderately well. You don't actually want the collection of plate appearances for a given batter or a pitcher in a certain game to be independent. Because if they were, you run the risk of the sort of product of their variability magnifying upon itself. You want there to be some amount of memory baked into each iteration of a plate appearance to know how the previous plate appearances worked out, so that you can keep it sort of queued up to what reality actually what happened in reality, so that the simulation doesn't sort of drive itself too far away from that reality.
I would get off the train there, actually. So I framed it a different way when I was writing my tenets. I feel like so what I was writing was that I think luck of the draw should be random, but it may make sense to weight the concept of luck towards over and under performance in real life, which will have the effect of balancing stats, but and it also might account for things that we don't know about the game. I think I don't, if we're saying that a player is a 260 hitter, but we're saying like in the sim he hits 300 because it's random and we don't think batting average matters all that, or is like one of the things that is deterministic.
Don't use that word.
Okay.
Well, I don't think you mean deterministic in the way that you just used it. Maybe you did. You're trying to say that batting average is not like an indicator of true talent as much as other statistics might be, right?
Right.
Okay.
To
me, deterministic means like you know what the outcome is going to be before it happens.
So I meant it in a combination of those two things, but I was conflating them. Okay. Anyway. Okay. So I think it's also maybe a little bit arrogant to assume that a player who hits 260, that parts of the batting average don't matter because we've researched it. I think I would say I would add a fudge factor for not knowing things. But just to break it down a little bit more and maybe to take this into a different area, when talking about, like, let's say batter-pitcher interaction, the way I would consider doing it, and I don't know if this is what we've been talking, let's say this is an oversimplification, but, on a 2-day scale, the hitter's a 4, the pitcher's a 6, the outcome should be a 5. But what are the things that go into the into the 4? Like, maybe he's a lefty and the pitcher is a righty, so the hitter's a little better. Maybe the hitter is a ground ball pitcher, the hitter's a ground ball hitter and the pitcher is a ground ball pitcher, which will, you know, favor, let's say, the hitter unless the defense comes into play. You know, so, those are the kinds of things that go into, again, let's say anything above 5 is a hit, you know, or 7 or 5 is 50% of the time is a hit. So I think you, like, run those numbers, come up with an interaction number, and then eventually run the play, for instance. Or run the pitch, if you want to do a pitch by pitch.
But you're saying that every time you took that batter against that pitcher, it would be the same thing?
Depending on the results of the day, like the day in real life, depending upon the batter's handedness, depending upon their, again, in real life, recent performance, maybe some factor for fatigue. Yeah.
So if that pitcher faces that batter 3 times in the game, you want all 3 plate appearances to come out the same?
Probabilistically, yes.
That's like a very unspecific term. You want them to have the same mean, the same expected outcome?
Yes, yes.
And the same probability distribution?
Yes, with perhaps some variation due to fatigue. So they may end up being slightly different.
Let's say, for the sake of a more concrete example, we're going through all the possible outcomes of the plate appearance, and we've built like the probabilities for all those things to happen, and there's a 10% chance he hits a home run. If the virtual dice are thrown and he hits a home run in the first plate appearance, do you think he should still have a 10% chance in the second plate appearance?
Yes.
So what if he hits 3 home runs in those 3 at-bats just because he gets 3 rolls of the dice that are all, you know...
Mazel.
Driving there.
That's stratomatic. Yeah, I have no problem with that.
Well, you say that, but that leads you to a simulation that has a bunch of outcomes that don't look like what you're expecting. And if you don't
I don't really have a problem with that, because in the aggregate, well.
So I think you and I disagree on how that reflects what you said earlier. When we were talking about whether you know about how platoon splits work or not, you're saying you want the output to look reasonable, but if it doesn't have any sort of memory about what happened in the past, you're going to end up naturally, just by the course of randomness, the way that those virtual dice are thrown, eventually at some point you're going to get the guy that hits 25 home runs more in the simulation than he did in real life, and you're going to be like, that's bonkers, it looks broken, there's no way that should have happened.
If you're talking on a player's scale, yeah. But if you look at the system, you would never say that.
How would any one person playing the game ever look at the whole system?
You would look at the league total. I don't understand. Like, in Scoresheet, can't you tell that, like...
Yeah, but that's because Scoresheet has a memory built into it. Like, the Bartons are very explicit about this, and they'll tell you. It's because people say they want random, but they don't actually want it to look random. That's what Jared said earlier. And I think that part of it is about whether or not the different plate appearances are actually independent. And I mean, like, statistically independent in the sense that, like, the outcome of the first one doesn't impact the outcome of the second one. I think... you actually want the simulation to have dependent trials that have memory about what happens so that you can keep the aggregate outcomes as closely aligned to what people expect as possible. Because people aren't going to look at like a list of all of the individual plate appearances and say, across the whole league, on average, the expected value was 0.15 home runs, and over these 100 plate appearances, there were 16 home runs hit, so I'm okay with that. They're going to say, how did this guy hit 8 home runs this week? Or whatever. Because at some point it'll happen.
I guess that's where we fundamentally disagree, because I have no problem with that. If you did a study of the league, and you would say, oh, it looks like the platoon splits correlate with, 70% to real life, which is... you know, about what a correlation would be, plus or antonyms. I don't see why. I have zero problem with that. Score sheet does that. I, you know, that's something I don't agree with fundamentally. There are other systems, again, out of the park baseball, I believe, uses mostly independent simulation. And I, you know, their stats end up taking a random walk at the end of the year, and that's fine. And Stratomatic obviously takes a random walk, and I don't think anyone really has a problem with that game. It's a different design decision, but I lean towards the latter.
Okay. I don't know that I know what I personally want. I'm thinking more like what I would anticipate the collective populace would want.
Yeah, you weren't asking me to come up with anticipation of the populace.
Oh, no, I know.
Collective. I'm asking, you know, my own tenets. I'm pretty firm on that point, personally.
Jared, did you fall asleep?
No, I did not fall asleep. I was thinking about what I want. I don't know. And it's also hard to figure out like what people want. But I think the difference with something like Strat is that you see the card. So even if the stats diverge, you know why, and you feel comfortable that you know what the card is. And if, you know, like, I'm terrible at rolling dice, fine, I'm terrible at rolling dice. But
you have a lot more information about what's going on behind the
scenes.
Well, I think showing information is fine. I think there should be a player card that should be somewhat detailed. I have no problem with that.
So you basically want Stratomatic.
Yeah, I mean, it's...
But using
the best thing ever to come from Long Island. But using real-life results. Yes, yes, more or less. And using some of the assumptions of the 21st century. To me, that is about a Platonic ideal.
I didn't actually write down tenets because I couldn't. I'm not that decisive. I spent most of my time with my brain wandering around the two topics that I just brought up and trying to decide if it wouldn't be better just to have like a very simple three true outcomes based simulation that was like less realistic but could be more fun. Like, would it be more fun to have something like super simple that's not super realistic, but was still tied to reality, I guess. Not like, you know, you could have minimal amount of nuance while still having it be realistic, I think. Or yeah. Like, yeah, go ahead.
So that correlates pretty well. Again, so my first principle, my first tenet, the game should be fun. If you're deciding between realistic and fun, fun wins.
Yeah.
That said, for me, and I believe for you, the listener, and a lot of the types of people listening to the who would be interested in this world, I don't think the simpler result is more fun. So, you know, I think that people search and thirst for complexity. Not complexity for its own sake, but for nuance, for adding more inputs to make decisions harder. And I think a game that makes decisions harder and empowers people to balance decisions, both in in-game and general managerial level, is what I look for in this sort of product. And I think Scoresheet does a terrific job at that.
So what I heard you describe is like the difficulty of strategic decisions and like strategic complexity.
Yes.
Do you think that is inherently tied to the complexity of the underlying simulation, or is it just like a product of how the interface is designed and like what options are given to the user?
It's a good question. I think for me, a player's ability should mirror real life to the greatest degree possible. So in that sense, I think having a more I think having more robust engine, simulation engine with more complexity leads to more decision making. If you have platoons, for instance, in your game, that or platoon splits in your game that are realistic, then the manager has to balance that and account for that when playing. If you have pitch assortment, then you have to balance that in your game.
You mean like pitch assortment that you were talking about earlier as it drives outcomes?
Yeah, and right, did those have to be in there? No. You know, certainly score sheet is enjoyable without it, but without like pitch assortment. But I do think including it makes a game more interesting and better reflects real life.
That makes sense. Do you have other tenets you want to share?
Sure. So I kind of split them into in-game and out-of-game. And, you know, we've been talking, I think, mostly about the in-game engine. So for in-game, I think whenever one of my core tenets, whenever possible, control over an in-game decision should be left in the hands of a manager. That includes, let's say, defensive positioning, base running strategy, platoons, when to hook a pitcher. And I think the manager's decision should mirror the hard choices that are found in real life. You know, for instance, if a player is being used more in during a season or during a game than he is in real life, there should be consequences for that. You know, I think one of the challenges that we have in score sheet is that, you know, the part-time players either play too little at a position or too much because there are no consequences for playing time. You know, so I think uniqueness, makes a simulation more interesting. So a player's uniqueness, in terms of like their pitch assortment, their ground ball fly ball ratio, their, relative BABIP for hitters. Those are the kinds of things I like. I would love to see in my platonic ideal of a simulation engine. I don't think any of them are required, but I think it adds to the complexity and richness of the game. You know, I think what I said before, or what I was kind of circling around before, that I do personally prefer games where interactions are independent and kind of random around a core variable that accounts for a number of factors. While taking hitting, pitching, and fielding into account, as well as positioning, because we know that that's important. And I do think, I don't like luck balancing per se, but, well, maybe I do. That, you know, I don't think luck balancing for the sake of making a player's stats mirror real life is, that's not something that's important to me. But I think, you know, if a luck factor is something that goes into an engine, I think that should mirror real life statistics.
You know, the luck factor is going to directly oppose your desire for independent simulation trials, right?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Okay.
But that's why I'm saying I don't think it should be, I don't think it should be 100% in that direction, because everything else I'm saying does point in that direction. But I do think having some sort of clutch or fudge, clutch factor, for, you know, real life, it should be into the melange, just because I think if you don't have that, it's not just that statistics may, you know, get away from real life. It's that I think there are things we don't know about the game. And if you assume that, you know, everything in your model is all that goes into a real life baseball player or, you know, play, then that's probably pretty arrogant.
Yeah, you're already wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree about that.
And then just on the manager side, again, you know, I think that's an important part of what I like most about Scoresheet. You know, I think we're all relatively reluctant in-game managers, and at least a relatively enthusiastic general manager. I would love to have as many of the tools of a real-life general manager as possible. And I think here the controls should be in the hands of the commissioner. So I would love to see commissioners have the option to include modules like free agency, like salaries and salary caps, the ability to include minor leagues, you know, having waivers or not. If real life, if they should have real life roster management, like 25 or 40 man rosters. Mm-hmm. If you should have a real rule 4 or rule 5 draft. You know, those are all, like, again, platonic ideal systems, but I think those are the kinds of tools that I would love to see in a game. I think player pools should be flexible. You know, you should be able to draft an AL team, an NL team, mixed teams. I would love to see a simulation where you could use real-life rosters and start the season as, let's say, the quote-unquote Orioles.
Team of Destiny. And,
right, and make your decisions based on therein from opening day, you know, and just see where your team goes throughout the season. And if you can straight be smarter than Duquette.
No one can be smarter than Duquette.
No. And I would love to see a game where there's some in-season control in terms of player signing. You know, maybe this is me comparing to Scoresheet, and I apologize for that. But you know, I think the supplemental draft is an interesting concept. I would probably lean more towards free agency myself, while giving the commissioner probably control over that sort of discretion, whether to use a FAB budget or weekly waiver claims or true free agency or supplemental drafts or, you know, whatever. That's about it.
Just that.
Yeah. Small theses.
Yeah. That's good. I'm impressed that you were able to come up with that many specific things.
Yes. Well, it turns out I have a lot of opinions.
I have a lot of opinions too, but I'm not quite that decisive. Or at least I couldn't bring myself to be in this case. Jared, do you have any specific thoughts you wanted to add before we...
when we think of specifics and decisiveness.
We do think we do.
I guess the one comment that I've been wanting to make is, and maybe this is partially because I come from like a Mali UN background, but... Wait,
how does one come from a Model UN background? Like, I know you participated in Model UN, but is that like... Never mind. Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I should, you know...
He's actually representing Zimbabwe.
In college, I ran a simulation of a meeting of baseball owners, so I was essentially Bud Selig, and the people from different colleges were representing the different owners. I get into the Model UN. Anyway... The point is that for me, I think it'd be kind of cool to have a sim where one person, where you separate the roles of manager, general manager, and owner. So one person is the manager, a different person is the general manager, and say a third person is the owner. And maybe an ideal world if somebody, you know, somebody in commission as well.
Can I be the owner?
Yeah. Sure, if you want. But so, I mean, I guess in some sense, like our partnership, we sometimes. You know, veered more to one of those roles than the other, but I'm saying like have, you know, specifically different people and, mm-hmm. you know, maybe an idea would have the ability to fire your manager or
I think Ian would be all three,
you know, just stuff like that. Now. And I think, well, sure. But I think like, I mean, for me in particular, the in-game management stuff is probably the least interesting. Like I get why it's cool. And some of it is fun, but yeah. If I could, you know, just be the general manager and have somebody else deal with the manager stuff, that would be a little more fun for me, I think. And I think it would be a little interesting as a manager to not have control over your players. It'd be frustrating too, but to see what it's like dealing with the general manager who screws with your roster all the time.
Yes.
Sure. Yeah. I think that's an interesting approach. I think that would actually be something that you could possibly implement in your score sheet league if you wanted to, using some house rules.
Oh yeah, sure.
But I think it ties back to what you're talking about, the flexibility in terms of what kind of drafts, and if there's free agency or a fab budget or, you know, changing the number of stuff. Mm-hmm. I think you need to have that as well for it to be more interesting for a GM or an owner type.
Yeah, sure. And I think when it comes down to it, I think for me, the fundament of a simulation or a game in general is to engender decision making. So you feel like the decisions you make have an impact, and that they are challenging, and that you have to balance concerns when making that decision. To me, that is right. To me, that is inherently as close to fun as you can get.
Something will never actually be fun, but
no.
The only thing that I can think of that's more fun than talking about what is fun is talking about what is fun again. So I think we should probably pause now and see if we have any additional thoughts next week.
Okay. And then, so you're saying we should talk about what is fun, like the best thing that we saw this week?
Yeah, that's what we should do now. And then we can talk more about simulations in the future. I don't know if we have enough to really dedicate another episode or not, but
we can just talk about this until the end of days.
Yes, at least until we get to our 100th episode, and then we can just go out.
All right,
we made it.
But if anyone has any other thoughts along these lines, I hope that this has been an interesting discussion.
Most of the fun noodling I had this week was prompted by the email that we got from Steve. So thank you, Steve.
Yeah, very much. And if anyone else has any thoughts on this topic, again, scoresheet@baseballperspectives.com. We'd love to hear from you, and will probably lead us in like 15-minute directions of random conversation. So if you like
deterministic or stochastic random conversation.
You know, I don't actually know. Probably stochastic if it comes down to it. I feel like our podcasts are pretty much a random walk.
There's a callback.
Yeah, we're very good at callbacks. Ben, what's the best thing you saw this week?
I don't even know if I have a best thing I saw this week. I don't think I do.
Okay.
Yeah,
I didn't. Aired it a while for 2 weeks. I understand.
I also didn't.
I've been there.
I didn't have a good week, so.
Okay, sorry to hear that.
You know, it happens.
Yeah.
How will you appreciate the good weeks if you don't have any basis for comparison?
I have a number of little things, so nothing major. The Futures game is always the highlight of my, just about the highlight of my baseball season.
In life.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah, once they become actual players, who cares? But so much more enjoyable than the All-Star game, which is just a night at this point. There is no saving the All-Star game.
It's another good GN newsletter.
Yeah, I feel like actually I have more hope for the Home Run Derby, but it just needs the removal of one certain announcer, and I might be able to listen again.
Did you see what Will East wrote about that?
No, but I'm sure we have very similar thoughts.
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Who I hate very much in 1995, but I'm no longer 13.
Ian, I know you listened to Effectively Wild. Have you listened to the episode they did where Sam asked Ben if he would watch like different variations of the Home Run Derby?
No.
Okay, I'll run them by you real quick, just with the obvious caveat that we're parroting. So this was
When in doubt, use the content of a better podcast. Exactly. I am 100% favorite. Exactly. Yes.
So this came out of the discussion about Madison Bumgarner wanting to be in the Home Run Derby, and then there being like, should there be a separate pitcher's Home Run Derby? And they were basically debating whether that would actually be entertaining or not, given that like there's only evidence that like one, maybe two hitters or pitchers are actually going to be able to hit that many home runs, and the rest of them are just going to kind of go up there and flail. So Sam proposed to Ben a home run derby of managers, only managers.
Okay.
And then
I would be as likely to tune in as I am to the real home run derby.
Yeah, I think that was their consensus also, that that would be entertaining, but like not for the same reasons, obviously, because Giancarlo Stanton is like way more fun to watch than Brad Ausmus or whatever. They talked about first and third base coaches. They talked about hitting coaches, and of course, like Barry Bonds. And then they talked about like stars of blank decades, so like stars of the aughts, stars of the 90s.
I do not understand. Okay, stars of the 80s. Not understand why there is not an old timers game. I do not understand why there is not a seniors league. This is crazy to me. You can't find like 40 old major leaguers who are like, boy, I really hate sitting around the house and actually having to like be a parent. That sucks. Let me go and join a seniors league.
Is it possible that they're like physically unable to do it? Like their bodies have been so beat up by playing every day for like 7 months for however many years that
some of them have to be, right?
But like,
every major leaguer over the age of 40 ever? I don't know. Would I want to see Mark McGwire hit again? Yeah, hell yeah. I don't care if he's a good. Like, I would watch that immediately. You wouldn't watch an old timers game?
I think I would.
If Cal Ripken was that shortstop, you would cancel your plans.
Yeah,
you have plans, undoubtedly.
Sure,
I got lots of plans.
In this fantasy world, I have plans. Yeah.
Yeah, as long as we're making shit up, Jared's got plans.
I mean, it's inexplicable to me that this hasn't happened yet in any major.
The answer has to be money, right? I feel like whenever you're like, this doesn't quite add up, like, this doesn't make sense, and like, it always comes back to money.
It just feels like there'd be a lot of money available. It feels like Barry Bonds is more famous than any current major leaguer. And the only barrier to him being in the major leagues right now, well, okay, bad example. The only barrier to, let's say, Derek Jeter being in the major leagues right now is that he's not talented enough to play with the major leaguers as currently constituted.
Yeah.
I don't think it would be as big a deal. Like, I don't think senior golf is as big a deal as the PGA Tour. But
I think it's called the Champions Tour now.
Whatever.
I don't know. Yeah, that for sure.
That's true.
Yeah, no, I think an old timers game is a great idea. Sorry, I horribly derailed the best thing you saw this week. But
yeah, that's okay. It's a better conversation because I always think this, and I've never had a chance to say this, you know, haphazardly at the end of an hour and a half conversation. But the world really needs that opinion. And the thing that galls me the most is that the only team I believe that does this to any real satisfaction is the Yankees.
Yeah.
And it's great, and it's always sold out. Like, those are the hardest tickets to get in the year. And it's the Yankees, so it's like, you know, awful and pompous, but it's also great.
It's more entertaining than watching the actual Yankees.
Yeah, you get to see like Jeff Nelson. I mean, the Yankees are essentially the senior tour of Major League Baseball at the moment, but you know, I would 100% watch like Edgar Martinez hit again. I don't care if he's good at it. That does not bother me in the slightest.
Yeah, so Ben and Sam had a funny conversation about like all the different home run derbies you could have. So.
All right. That's great. So I love the futures game. I don't have a lot to report from it other than that Eloy Jimenez was a monster in it, and you know, that kind of came up already. And the All-Star game, I don't know what you thought. That was fine.
Yeah.
That was okay too. So the actual best thing I saw this week actually happened today, where the trailer for La La Land came out. I don't want to talk about that as the best thing I saw this week, but for God's sake, watch it. that is everything I would look for in a movie. And Jared, too, I think.
Ben, don't watch that trailer. It's not going to give you the same impression that it gave Ian.
Really?
Yeah.
Great.
It's a musical.
Oh, God.
It's a rom-com.
Oh, I forgot to... Oh, sorry.
Sorry. Starring Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling.
Okay,
Emma Stone. More do you want in a movie?
Emma Stone.
Directed and written by the guy who did Whiplash.
Which is a fantastic movie. I think the one movie that Jared and I agreed on from that year.
my wife got really into a TV show this past week. And,
oh.
What show?
Orphan Black.
Yeah, that's a rabbit hole.
You got the references. You're like, man, I know what's going on.
I like... when she first brought it up, I was like, oh, that's the one with the actress that plays all the roles, right? And she's like, yeah. Did you watch it? I'm like, no. But I listened to Jared and Ian talk about that actress like so often. And I couldn't remember her name for the longest time. And I was like, it's got this certain like feel to it. I think I can't remember how I described it. It was, you know, a bad descriptor. And then, of course, I remembered it as Tatiana Maslany. And
yeah.
Just like you guys.
Who wouldn't?
Well, I hadn't watched this stupid show. Yeah, she got obsessed with it and like plowed through it in a week. It's kind of funny.
All right. Bobble Allison is nodding from my shelf over there. So the game I really want to talk about, which was an actual baseball game I saw this week. So the Pirates this week called up, essentially the Indianapolis Indians. They called up Josh Bell and Tyler Glasnow and Chad Kuhl. James Tyone came up last week. It's really weird to me, by the way, that all these players suddenly are ready for the major leagues at the exact same time, just after the Super 2 deadline. Yeah. They like all learned all the things that they needed to learn from being in the minor leagues for so long.
It's like a giant middle finger, right? It's like...
Yeah, I don't know how that happened. What a great development system that they managed to get all their players ready around, you know, the last week of June into early July. Just really
the time of that way so that everybody can come up at the same time and support each other.
Yeah.
It's just a more
they've got like a brotherhood.
Just great bonds. Development. The debut I wanted to talk about was actually perhaps the least well known player of the bunch. So Steven Brault came up this week. About 10 days ago at this point. So I don't know how well you know Steven Brault.
Intimately.
Okay. You've heard of him before? So he is a...
I think I might have picked him up, actually, in fantasy. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, well, we all make our choices.
Well, I know a little bit more about Steven Brault.
Yeah, so he is a probably, I would say, a future fourth starter or so. I think back end of the bullpen guy, but he's interesting for a number of reasons. Very little of them to do with baseball. Have you ever seen Steven Brault's tattoo?
I don't know that I have.
Okay, I'll be sending that to you guys now. Everybody else, feel free to Google. It is a futuristic designed something of a honeycomb, and on the other side there's some sort of circuitry going Ooh. On. It's a really good tattoo design. And he's an interesting guy. He did a great Ask Me Anything on Reddit. A couple of interesting facts about him. So, number one, Steven Brault went to Florida Gulf Coast University. He went to Regis University in Denver. And Regis University, you haven't heard of it for a number of reasons. But the main reason he chose Regis University was because it was the one school that allowed him to pursue a baseball program as well as major in his chosen interest of vocal music.
Nice.
As a vocal music major. So Steven Brault when not pitching, is in a is the lead singer in a band, and you know, I will send this to you, and you can listen to Stephen Brault's Led Zeppelin cover. you know, if we had the editing inclination, I think we'd mark it in, but no. I would say instead, guys, Google Street Gypsies and Led Zeppelin. That's the name of the band. And Ben, that's my little gift to you. And Jared, my little gift to you. So do you know why Stephen Brault is on the Pittsburgh Pirates?
I 100% know why Stephen Brault is on the Pittsburgh Pirates. This is not a gift to me at all.
So why is Stephen Brault on the Pittsburgh Pirates as opposed to the team that drafted him?
Because the Orioles had a burning need that could only be fulfilled by Travis Snyder.
That's great.
That's right. Travis Snyder, who had 236 at-bats for the Baltimore Orioles, batted 237, 318, 341 for an 81 OPS plus, and 0.9 wins above replacement, according to Baseball Reference. Solid defense there. That was really unexpected for considering the rest of his career. I'm going to take the under on that number in reality. And for the purpose of that, they give up a fifth starter. And what I enjoy most about that is that I believe that means the Orioles now have a complete rotation of starting pitchers in the major leagues who are better than any starting pitcher on the Baltimore Orioles.
Chris Tubb is having an okay year.
Hashtag kill the win, right?
I mean, although Jimenez's ERA is under 7.5, so I don't see how this is a loss for the Orioles.
So yes, as always, the best thing I saw this week is another way to torture Orioles fans.
That reminds me, I figured out what the actual best thing was that I saw this week.
Oh, sure.
It was Finding Dory. It was good. It was exactly what you expect.
I enjoy that the best thing you saw this week is something that you forgot for most of the time that you watched and then remembered suddenly midway through. It's sort of thematically appropriate.
Yeah.
Okay. And Jared, what is the best thing you saw this week?
I mean, so the obvious answer is Mark Trumbo in the Home Run Derby.
He won,
but
right?
So, what?
He won, right?
In my heart, he won.
he won your heart.
So, the best thing I saw was kind of weird, and I don't think I'm going to describe it at all very well, but that's on me. So, last week, there was a happy hour for a coworker who was leaving, a guy that I didn't know that well, but like we worked fairly close to each other in terms of where we were in the office, and he was a good guy. He's going to Duke for MBA, I think. And so, you know, alcohol was involved in this happy hour. I was one of the last people sticking around with him and some other guys. And I heard the most insane How We Met story ever. It's not him, but one of my other coworkers. She's from Puerto Rico. The guy is from Argentina. They met on Yahoo, in a Yahoo pool room. Like, they were playing billiards pool.
Nice.
On Yahoo.
Nice.
Yahoo Argentina.
Nice.
They talked for 5 years before they met. Wow. At which point, they hadn't seen each other at all. She flew from Puerto Rico to Argentina.
Wow.
He picked her up at the airport with his dad.
Of course.
And so, like, they're driving back to his town, and it's been like a while. And she's from Puerto Rico, right? Everything is pretty, you know, it's not far if you're in Puerto Rico. So he picked her up from the airport, and they're driving back, and it's been 2 hours, and they're not back yet. And she's like, so where are we going? And he's like, yeah, we're back to my place. And she's like, yeah, it's been 2 hours. How much farther is it? He's like, yeah, it's another 4 hours. So he picked her up. He drove 6 hours to pick her up at the airport, which is like sweet and romantic. But can you imagine flying to a country you've never been to? Like, especially like if you're a girl, I'm sure it's 100 times worse. Getting picked up by this guy you've never met before, and having to drive 6 hours before you get to like the place. Like, you know you're driving to your death at that point. Like, there's no other option. So there was that, and then so I had a little drink. I was walking back home. I was listening to the podcast about Pat Summit.
I will say only one thing would have made that story better is if they met on a Yahoo Answers forum.
Oh, that would be better. But no, like, this is still like Yahoo Pool Argentina. She would organize pool tournaments. His friend would play, and like he would make fun of them for playing, and then she got him to play. Like, I don't believe this story at all, but it's amazing. So I was in a podcast about Pat Summit and what amazing coach and person, you know, she was, and and how what impact she had on lives. And my path back home. I happened to the way I walk back home, I walk with like 100 yards of the Capitol, and so I'm walking.
Great news for stalkers. Shout out.
Yeah, at this point in my life, stalker would be at least some sort of attention, so I'll take it. But there's a protest going, and it turns out later Black Lives protest, stuff. Mm-hmm. Same time, but like, so it was just this weird confluence of events all going on within a few minutes of each other. Just, you know, this is like this poignant moment of how, you can have an impact on someone else knowingly or unknowingly, whether it's a coworker that you barely know, and I'll probably freak at this guy in a matter of weeks and he will, you know, so he will lie, but we had worked together for like years, or whether it's someone that you meet online in the Yahoo pool room, or Pat Summit having this, you know, direct impact, meaningful impact on the people, or, you know, just a protest that sparked from something states away that ends up here. It was such like this meaningful moment of that you can have an impact on other people and do, and even if you don't know it, it's something that's happening all the time.
That's very fair. So, yeah. It has been a rough couple of weeks for the country, but that part of it is heartening. So I agree. There's a lot you can do to affect people. And I think that's very well said, to go out and, you know, seize the opportunity and go out and make an impact wherever you can. On a weird and mature note, I feel like we should.
That'll be the last time for me.
All right. No, that's very fair. I don't know how to bring it back to, the levity required to sign off. We may just have to stay here forever online, just watching your podcast tile click up a few more seconds. Maybe taking some pauses if your podcast filter cleans out pauses. You know, we'll just talk every few seconds just to fool that. All right, let that marinate. Awkward silence. Ah, back to the best that we can offer.
I gotta go watch Mr. Robot again.
All right. But are you really even there? All right. Well, anyway, on behalf of Ben Murphy and Jared Weiss, I'm Ian Lefkowitz. Thanks again, and have a great day.
Three true outcomes they want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes, insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes, come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes, Ian, Ben, and Jared. Scoresheet baseball can be tricky if you don't possess the edge. They'll call it the way they see it, you'll rarely hear them hedge. They each possess the knowledge, honed from years of play. You want to win at Scoresheet? You're going to want to stay with three true outcomes. They want to entertain you today. Three true outcomes. Insightful baseball news underway. Three true outcomes. Come on out to the ballpark and play. Three true outcomes. The number one independent score sheet podcast in the U.S. of A.